Hello, and a very warm welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM. My name is Mike Fletcher.
And I'm Paul Cook. And together we'll be diving into the world of events professionals and interviewing key figures to unearth new thinking, new ideas, and up-to-date advice for industry newcomers.
New in Events is for everyone working in the meetings, incentive, conference, and event sectors. You may have recently got a job in this industry and you're looking to learn from more experienced players, or you may be a seasoned pro looking for new solutions, new ways of working, and inspiration for how your events can evolve for the future.
Whichever part of the events industry you work in, and no matter how long you've been one of us, you've come to the right place.
New episodes of Season 1 will be available throughout the first half of 2024, so don't forget to follow and subscribe on whichever channel you download your podcast from.
Or you can follow us and IBTM Events on social media, and we'll let you know every time a new episode is published.
So, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to episode 6. This one is all about advocacy and how the industry represents itself. Mike, it's great to see you again. So can you just tell our listeners who we have on the show today?
Hi, Paul. Good to see you. We've got a couple of great advocates for the meetings and events industry on the podcast today. Later, we'll be hearing from Martin Fullard from the Business of Events. He popped by the podcast booth at IBTM World last year. But first, we're going to hear from Marta Gomez. Now, she's the president of ICA, and she's also the deputy executive director of sales for VParis, a collection of venues in the French capital. As we know, Paris has got a very exciting summer coming up with hosting the Olympic and Paralympic Games. So she'll be telling us a little bit about how the city is preparing for that. But first, she starts by telling us how Paris got its name, City of Light. Let's hear what she's got to say.
You might imagine that it's to do with the lit up monuments in the evenings and the sparkling Eiffel Tower every hour. But actually, originally, it's quite an old historical name, and it came from the fact that it was one of the first cities in the world to have street lighting, already in the period of the Louis XIV. And so it goes along also with this idea of innovation and modernity and engineering. And if we think often of Paris, of the city of large avenues, of this incredible sewer system before its time. But it's also a more intangible description. It's also to do with the age of the Enlightenment and the kind of symbolic significance of Paris as the center of education and ideas, inspiring poets and artists and philosophers, engineers and scientists. So why am I telling you all this? I think that it also influences a lot the power that it has on attracting international conferences and events and also international organizations that are based here, because it's really a city of contrasts. It's a city of very dynamic business with over 850,000 companies based here, the largest, most important economic region in Europe, with thousands and millions of people who work here. And at the same time, it's also a very powerful tourist destination. It's one of the most visited cities in the world, has the most famous monuments in the world, of course, the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, Notre Dame that will reopen later this year after the renovation and the fire. Indeed, Paris has this very powerful aura that makes it a city that everybody dreams of visiting and is always happy to come back to. Whether, you know, it's the most beautiful city, the most romantic city, the most fashionable city, everyone really has a special reason to love Paris. And that sort of provides a mix of business attraction, scientific attraction, but also this incredible infrastructure that is perfect for hosting international conferences and events. It's a small, compact city, but has incredible access from around the world with the airports, the train connections, because tourists need to get here every year, an enormous choice of hotels of every category to cater for every need, a metro stop on every corner, very easy to get around in Paris. And then, of course, the art de vivre that helps people, attract people to coming to conferences, whether it's a French baguette or a glass of wine on a terrace, or dinner in a neighborhood bistro. So it also has a very long history of hosting international conferences and events. Our venue, Porte de Versailles Exhibition Center, will be 100 years old next year. And the Palais des Congrès, the conference center, will be 50 years old this year. So there's a really a long history of hosting international events. And if we think of things that have really shaped the landscape of Paris, like the World Expo, or even these sumptuous, spectacular dinners in Versailles with fireworks, I mean, there's a real expertise as well in organizing events and putting on a good show. And I think that's really part also of what the city is all about.
You certainly have a lot going on in Paris. And this summer, even more, because you're going to host the Olympic and Paralympic Games. What are you most looking forward to about the Games? And what legacy do you believe it will have for the French capital?
So I'm very personally so excited about the Games coming to Paris. I can't wait to see them. And it's starting to show a little bit in the city. I was walking yesterday in the city with my daughter, and we saw some of the stadium that will host the beach volleyball near the Eiffel Tower is almost finished. Starting to see that the Games are coming and it's visible in the city streets. It's incredible to be able to host the Games, not just in my city, but of course in our venues. Vie Paris will be also hosting the Games in four of our venues, whether for the press. So we'll have the broadcast center in Paris-le-Bourget, the press center in Palais des Congrès, and also the North and South Paris arenas are two of our exhibition centers that will be hosting Games, both for the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games. So there's been this huge excitement with our teams very much involved. We also have a team of athletes that we're supporting. So we've been making these videos where we will have, for example, the captain of the French volleyball team who is in our Vie Paris team that will be preparing the Games with someone from Bordeaux Versailles. So this excitement of preparing it together. It's going to be a major event. We're expecting 15 million visitors to come. It's the first Games that have been happening since COVID because, of course, Tokyo was not able to have spectators. So it's going to be quite a spectacular event. And in terms of legacy, I'd say that this is something that has been really thought about by the Olympic Committee, Paris Olympic Organization Committee, right since the beginning and from the beginning of the actual bid process. To have the legacy built in and to have something that was really for the Parisians, for the residents, not just, for example, if we think of urban developments, especially in the north of Paris, which is one of the poorest areas of the city, where the Olympic Village will be constructed and will be leaving homes that will be used after the Games, improving transport in those areas, improving employment, and building a concept of the Games that was really open to everybody. This was a really founding principle of what the idea of the Paris Games were about. If we think, for example, of the opening ceremony, it will be organized along the River Seine, and so will be free to access for anyone who wants to come and watch. And that's really unique. It's never been done before. And also creating new spaces for the residents. Where it's interesting for our business is that it will also leave an important legacy in the event sector. If we think of the infrastructure, some new venues have been built, like a new arena. In Le Bourget, our venue in the north of Paris, we built a new hall that will be used by exhibitions after the Games. The new transport lines, it's very exciting to be able to see a metro connection to Orly Airport. And our Palais des Congrès Convention Center will also have a new metro station that will allow us to reach Gare du Nord in only 10 minutes. Where it's interesting is also the fact that the values of the Games that are to do with sustainability, innovation, accessibility, inclusion, and legacy, is really about a new way of organizing events that will inspire other organizers to be able to do things in the same way. If we think, for example, of sustainability, which is really a founding principle of the organization of the Paris Games, they've switched from doing a post-games assessment of the carbon footprint to actually creating a pre-games target carbon budget, which forces you then for everything that you do, every activation, to actually anticipate and think in advance of how you're going to conceive the spaces, what are you going to do to reduce the carbon emissions. Also, if we think of venues, the Paris Games are very unique in the sense that 95% of the venues used are either existing venues or temporary venues that will be demolished and reused after the Games. A lot of innovations as well around clean energy that have been created for the Paris Games. And if we think of food, very important for us Parisians, the Games will be creating what will be the world's largest restaurants, where they'll be serving 40,000 meals a day. And these meals have been conceived and imagined as well to have twice as many vegetables as normal and to be able to also source from locally around Paris and around France. In terms of innovation, I'm really looking forward to be able to seeing the drone taxis, flying taxis that will be tested out during the Games. There'll be lots of other hydrogen taxes that will be tested as well. But mostly, I think it's about inclusion in these games and how they're special. A lot of it is about improving accessibility, organizing games that are, for the first time, really 100% gender equal, where there are many female athletes as male athletes. And in terms of leaving a legacy for the business event sector, it was also about providing opportunities for local businesses to be able to bid for the games and to be able to provide services. So 90% of the suppliers of the games are actually French. Most of them are medium and small companies. So that was something also new for the games to be able to do that. And then to leave this expertise behind of new event professionals that will be able to organize events after the games. And also, interestingly, in terms of measurements, there's been the Paris 2024 Olympic Committee have worked with the OECD to create a specific measurement tool for measuring business events' impact. And that will be available for organizers afterwards that will want to use it.
You're, of course, the current president of ICA, which is the International Congress and Convention Association. This episode of New in Events is all about industry advocacy. So tell us about ICA's Global Advocacy Alliance and what are its aims, what are its ambitions?
Advocacy is not something new. It's been something that we've always had to kind of fight for. The meetings and events sector is not very well known or very well understood by governments, whether they're local or national. We depend a lot on governments for many things, and not just financial support or for our destination management organizations, but also in terms of being able to have the right support for when we're bidding for international events, that we're able to connect with the right sectors and the ministries involved. I think particularly now it's super important, it's more important than ever to do advocacy well, because we noticed during the COVID period, it was very hard for us. We were the first to be shut down and one of the last sectors to be able to reopen. And I think we learned quite a lot during that period about what kind of messages we needed to share. The aim of the ICA Advocacy Alliance is that advocacy is quite hard. Your voice alone is not enough. So the aims of setting it up as an organizational level for an association is basically similar to everything else that we do as an association. So it's about education. So being able to share case studies and don't have to reinvent everything every time you want to, you have to do something, and share relevant data and methodologies from best practice destinations. It's about collaboration, being able to go faster and better by doing things together. For example, the ICA Business Exchange, where we exchange information about events, it's a similar process that we can apply to advocacy, where we learn from destinations that do it well. We are able to facilitate these discussions where people can learn from each other on a one-to-one basis. And of course, consistency, because it's so important to speak with one voice, basically. And there is some consistency in the message that we're trying to share so that we elevate the topic for everybody, and that we hope these can be integrated not just in national policy discussions, but also in international ones like with the EU and with the G20 or the World Economic Forum or the UN. We need to elevate for the whole industry the messages that we're wanting to share.
So every year, ICA publishes city and country rankings for association meetings. Is that another advocacy tool, or does it have deeper significance? Why do you do it? Why does ICA publish these rankings every year?
I think it started out as a business objective. The idea was to be able to constitute a database of international prospects of events that rotate. In publishing a ranking, it then makes it more attractive for people to share their data and to be able to give as much information as they can. But I think it's become a bit more than that. A lot of destinations, the ICA ranking is a KPI, is something that you're able to see, well, if I implement these measures, if I do more, if I invest more, or if I do a more smarter approach, then how do I progress in the rankings? For many destinations, it serves as a benchmark, not just to compare your progress, but also compare yourself to other destinations and see how well you're doing.
Coming back to advocacy, you were recently in Brussels with the other industry association leaders to promote and, I suspect, educate the European Members of Parliament on the MICE industry's role in shaping Europe's future path. What were some of the outcomes of this meeting?
So first of all, I'd just like to say, you know, what a fantastic initiative this was from the Visit Brussels Convention Bureau that worked within the Belgian presidency of the European Union, they decided to propose to have a conference which was called a dialogue between the European Union representatives and the meetings industry to foster, you know, a better understanding. What I thought was very positive is that we realized that we have quite common goals in terms of what the European Union is wanting to achieve and how they're very similar to the meetings and events sector and some of the things that we are able to help them achieve as well. So if we think of things like competitiveness, resilience, sustainable development, these are absolute priorities for the European Union, but they're also absolute priorities as well for the meetings and events sector. And where I thought there was room for improvement was that there is often a lack of understanding on both sides, I'd say. We often complain that governments don't understand what we do and that we're not, you know, we're bundled with tourism, or even tourism is not even that recognized within the European Union. But at the same time, I think that there's a lack of understanding from our professionals about what the European rules and regulations are, the directives, and some of the things that directly affect the way we do business. So I thought that this event was not just an incredible example of the whole meetings industry coming together around a topic and around a discussion, but about being able to create this dialogue. And that is always positive because it helps to create a better understanding for both. And where I thought was interesting was this actually came from one of the European members of parliament about how associations really have a role to play in that, in being able to be a kind of a global voice. And at the same time, being able to translate some of these more difficult, complex topics for their members to be able to improve understanding as well of what the European objectives are, and to also encourage people to speak to their members of parliament or to share that also on a national level. It was very interesting, very positive, and I hope there'll be more dialogue of this kind in the future.
So there's lots of newcomers coming into the industry at the moment, and this podcast is very much aimed at newcomers. So what advice would you give someone who may be unsure how to navigate all the different roles and available career paths?
I'd say this industry, well, first of all, I love it and it's absolutely incredible. And I think you either love it or you hate it. So I think people who hate it probably don't stay that long. But most people who kind of fall into business events sector, they really fall in love with it for many reasons. I think because it's quite a stimulating environment. You get to be speaking to people who are often the world experts in their field, who are business owners, who are very attached to their events and to what they do. No one day looks the same. I think that in terms of advice, be curious, I would say, and then network as much as you can, because you can learn from so many people in the industry and in different places around the world. And this is a very open industry. People are very keen to share and very happy to collaborate. And I'd say also volunteer, step up, do your bits and give back to the industry. And I think it's a super exciting time to be working in events. And if we think about learning from data, from artificial intelligence, lots of experimentation going on, lots of startups and innovation. So it's quite an exciting time to be joining the industry.
We couldn't agree more. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Marta. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. We really look forward to the Paris Olympics this summer, especially the opening ceremony on the Seine. That's going to be incredible. So all the best with it. And thanks for joining the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back, listeners. We're in the podcast booth at IBTM World, and I have Martin Fullard with me. He is Director of News and Content for the Business of Events, a very important association. Martin, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, Mike. It's been a really successful first day on the show. It's fantastically busy. I mean, there's a real good energy out there, isn't there?
There is indeed. You've just come off stage recently. What were you talking about?
Well, today we have released our Global Destination Report 2023 in partnership with Meeting Ireland and IBTM World. Really, it's a tool to highlight the sentiment that's out there and how destinations feel they are comparing. They can benchmark themselves against an industry standard, so to speak. But the whole point of the report is that it's a tool to open meaningful conversations with government, for them to be able to point at certain elements like funding, business model to really sort of highlight how they compare. At the end of the day, we want everyone to be advocating for a strong business events industry. And for that to happen, your government, whether it's city, regional or national, needs to be on board and they need the information. So this report is very much a tool for these destinations and NTOs to open those conversations.
Fantastic. And what were some of the key findings?
Goodness me, I don't quite know where to start. Luckily, I have a copy of the report in front of me. But essentially, one of the most interesting things we saw was that core funding and stability has been quite static, generally speaking, across the board. But there has been an increase in funding for about 30% of destination respondents, which is really encouraging to see. So I'll try to find the numbers in the melee of pie charts that I find myself staring at. But broadly speaking, most destinations report that their funding hasn't changed since 2022. And that's understandable. It's better than going down. But the fact that they say, I think it's 31% of destinations have reported an increase in funding is really encouraging. That is meaning that some governments out there really are giving their destinations the resource and the tools they need to plow on, to advocate better, and they believe that events can actually make a positive difference. And that's what we want to talk more about.
And that's the important thing, isn't it? That governments actually understand the benefits of the events and meetings industry on the economic impact of their particular destinations.
The business model generally seems to be working for a lot of people. A lot of people are quite satisfied broadly with maybe where they sit, although we can't ignore the fact that some destinations feel that maybe they should be more closely aligned to other government departments. We wouldn't be going out naming because all this is anonymized, so we can't say who is what and who would prefer what. But as you could imagine, most destinations report into their tourism departments, whether that is on city, regional or national scale. And that's broadly fine. We understand that we're closely related to the visitor economy, but there is, let's call it, a groundswell of interest in being more aligned with, say, business and trade departments and other such departments like that. And I think that the tourism element is important because our events do mean lots of people do travel to XYZ. But I think we want to talk about the legacy. It's all well and good talking about the heads on beds, bums on seats aspect, all these wonderful people coming in and doing wonderful things. But what is the outcome? What's the legacy? We want to see destinations being supported with better advocacy from governments and perhaps a government department with a more strategic view beyond the confines of tourism might not be such a bad thing.
And is legacy something that comes out from the report?
Universally acknowledged as important, but I think half of the respondents, they felt that their government didn't really fully appreciate the value. I can only really speak from my own experiences in the UK market that perhaps is true, but that's just me speaking on my own. I think really the problem is there's a significant proportion of respondents and destinations broadly who sort of lack the resources to measure, monitor, and or even nurture business event legacy. I mean, it's quite a nebulous sort of thing, I guess. How do you articulate what the legacy is? Or certainly you can articulate it, but how can you measure it? And that could be anything, really. I mean, if you think, as a throwaway example, a particular medical congress would go to destination X, the event happens, thousands of people attend, and then, you know, pack up the trucks and go. But what could be the outcome of that? Could it lead to extra funding for the university department or maybe more? Can it therefore maybe tackle a health crisis or a social matter in that destination, whatever it might be? And that naturally can only yield a positive outcome. That is what we're about. We are tackling issues. And it doesn't matter what that issue is. It might be a corporate issue. It might be a sustainability issue. It might be a healthcare or a medical issue or something perhaps more scientific, where it might be relative to a local industry specialty. If I could just use the UK as an example, the West Midlands is famed for its automotive, Aberdeenshire very much oil and gas and now renewable energy. So there are these intrinsic relationships between what we do and furthering a better industry. And that's, again, what this report's all about. All the tools are there, but it just needs some evidence and it needs some willing attitudes. And that's what our report aspires to do, to give those destinations the tools they need to have those meaningful conversations with their governments.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for swinging by the podcast booth and sharing the findings of this report. Thank you, Martin. Have a good show.
You're quite welcome.
I'm actually really looking forward to the Olympic and Paralympic Games being in Paris this summer, Paul. As Marta pointed out, it'll be the first game since COVID to have spectators. As Tokyo, people weren't allowed to be there. So the atmosphere in the French capital will be amazing, won't it?
I think it will. And I think Paris are no stranger to putting on the Games. They've done it twice already, once in 1900, and then a second time in 1924. So a whole 100 years have passed since that time. But developments have been pretty amazing in terms of what's gone on in new sports coming in and new things going on in terms of what happens. This year, for example, first time ever, they've got a IOC refugee Olympic team, which is made up of 36 athletes from 11 countries, and they're competing in 12 sports. So that is definitely something that's new this time around.
Wouldn't it be amazing if one of them won a medal?
Absolutely, it would. I mean, I'll be cheering all of the athletes. You have to just cheer them on for their sheer dedication and determination to win and even to compete. I think it's easy to take some of these things for granted. You see the athletes, but the journey they've had to take to get there is huge. So I think everybody should be tuned in from 26th of July to the 11th of August for the Olympics, but then also to reset the dial for the 28th of August to the 8th of September, because that's when the Paralympics take place.
And having that IOC refugee team will make the Olympics very inclusive, as will the opening ceremony, which takes place on the Seine, so everyone will get to experience it. I also loved what Marta said about how it inspires how events are better organised in the future from a sustainability perspective. The Olympics has always brought with it new venues and transport improvements, but the Paris Games is introducing a pre-Games carbon budget, which forces everyone to consider their impact beforehand rather than simply measuring it afterwards.
I think that's a brilliant point. I also like the fact that she was talking about the number of small and medium-sized businesses that have been able to get involved and to play a part in these particular games, because as we know all too well, that is representative of a lot of the event businesses globally. So the more that they can be shown and to be playing a part, it can only be good for the industry and how it represents itself to politicians and other people that are maybe unaware of what the events industry actually is.
Major events like the Olympics really puts the global meetings and events industry on a global stage and really shines the spotlight on what everybody does. Coming back to advocacy, both of our guests, I think, pointed out that it's quite hard and your voice alone is not enough. Advocacy is all about collaboration. It's all about partnership. And that seems to be a recurrent theme within this podcast, that it's all about consistency of message and the industry speaking with one voice or one consistent message to governments around the world.
And he does. And I think in our previous episodes that we've worked on, that idea of collective wisdom, there's a lot of collective wisdom in the event space. So being able to bring all of that forward through research papers, reports, and people really banging the drum to say, this is what we stand for, can only be a good thing.
ICA's doing some great work and Business of Events is doing some great work. And a lot of the other trade associations are doing some great work as well. As long as we're all singing from the same hymn sheet and we've all got one consistent message of advocacy for the impact and the value this industry brings, then it's a bright future for all. That's fantastic. Excellent. Well, that's the end of episode 6. So thanks so much, Paul. And we will be back again with a new episode soon.
Thanks so much for listening to New In Events, a podcast from IBTM. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Put November 19th to 21st in your diaries for IBTM World in Barcelona, and follow us on our social media channels for all the latest updates. Until next time.